In our next case, Benham versus City of Charlotte, number 10-1811.
Good morning. Frederick Nelson for appellants. May it please the court. There are two issues, really, that we would like to address. There's one that's a macro issue, and that is whether or not it's constitutional for a festival and that type of speech to have precedence over what they deem as a demonstration or what they deem as free speech.
Before you get to the merits, can I ask you a question about your ability to be here? In your complaint, did you ask for permanent injunctive relief?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you asked for declaratory relief?
Yes, Your Honor.
And those claims still stand in the court below?
Yes, Your Honor.
So the only thing you've been denied is a preliminary injunction?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so why isn't the case moot?
Your Honor, under the Miller case here in this court, a 2007 case, that also followed a later Supreme Court case.
Tell me, be sure that those are both situations where there's an appeal from a preliminary injunction, whereas there's been the same complaint, a request for a permanent injunction and injunctive relief that still abides in the district court. That's the situation in the cases that you're citing?
I believe in the Supreme Court case that was FEC versus Wisconsin Right to Life, the 2007 case, Your Honor. There they were seeking an injunction regarding an election statute, and by the time it got to the Supreme Court, that person had lost the election. However, the Supreme Court found that it was capable of repetition yet evading review.
But see, the problem is I don't understand how this statute evades review if you've requested permanent injunctive relief. You could have tried the case to get your permanent injunctive relief and your declaratory judgment way before you got a hearing here.
I understand, Your Honor.
So it wouldn't have ever evaded review.
Well, Your Honor, the issue of the preliminary injunction evades review because of this.
Well, you would have gotten a preliminary injunction, but you never asked for expedited consideration in this court from the denial of a preliminary injunction, did you?
No, we did not ask for expedited review, Your Honor.
I don't see how that this appeal would have remedied that in any event.
Well, Your Honor, as you sat on the panel
previously, I remember it well.
You'll remember at that time, that appeal was already coming to argument. You and Judge King both heard that appeal. We, of course, were under the impression this court may rule on that appeal and give us an answer to the substantive questions, which would be addressed in this appeal as well. In that appeal, as you may recall, Judge Floyd, you may not know this, but this court held there was no standing.
Okay.
I would thank you for that, Judge Floyd. And the point being is, Your Honor, obviously attorneys, as my esteemed colleague said a moment ago, we attempt to handle cases and attorneys do things the way they hope is best, not to burden the court, but also to get answers to questions so that there's judicial economy.
But
it's a practical...
That's what I'm worried about here is judicial economy. Explain to me in simple terms how this evades review if you still have pending in the district court, which I take you do have, a request for permanent injunction and a request for declaratory relief. So you could have gone ahead and gotten a ruling on those. There's nothing to have stopped you from doing that.
Perhaps.
You decide. What do you mean perhaps?
Well, perhaps the judge.
Did you ask for that?
Yes, we did.
You asked the district court to go ahead and grant you a permanent injunctive relief and declaratory judgment after he denied the interlocutory judgment?
No, Your Honor. I'm saying.
So you just filed your notice of appeal and came up here.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you left that. Is that what that case under a stay now?
It is under a stay by
so
agreement
stay
of parties.
Stay order entered?
Yes.
So it's been stayed pending disposition of this appeal?
Correct, Your Honor.
And so you appealed the preliminary injunction denial and didn't move to expedite the appeal?
Correct, Your Honor, because the other appeal,
so
which would have...
You weren't in any hurry to get an injunction.
Well, Your Honor...
You had a permanent injunction...
Request
petition pending in the district court, and you agreed to a stay, and you have a preliminary injunction denial appeal pending in this court, and you didn't ask us to speed it up. This doesn't echo right for me for injunction proceedings.
Your Honor, these events that we're asking about, they're applied for under the permit regulations, and as they come about, now there's one coming up in January.
But what I'm saying to you is you could have already had, you wouldn't have ever had to come back up here. You could have had your permanent injunction if you're correct. Or if you hadn't, you'd have had a final, you'd have had an appeal of a final judgment. You wouldn't have had to worry about interlocutory appeal.
I understand, Your Honor. But here's my point to answer Judge King's question, first of all. These events are applied for. There's an event coming up in January. We knew that. And then we also had the prior case before this court to try to answer these same questions. This judge below has already given us his answer. He's already said that the code
only
is okay.
On interlocutory appeal.
Well,
he hasn't talked about declaratory. Maybe he gives, but all the more reason to get him to rule. If you think you're going to lose, then you've tidied it all up to come up to us.
It's tidy in the sense, Your Honor, that all we're looking at is the facial code and the way they're applying it.
But so, all you're looking at it is an appeal from a denial of an interlocutory judgment.
Correct. But
interlocutory, okay.
The facts as they are below after a trial wouldn't change. The code as it is below.
Well, you wouldn't have any more facts then to get a resolution of the permanent injunction?
We may, but I'm saying the facts we're relying on below wouldn't change. In other words, you recall this.
But you normally, if you've got a situation where you, if the preliminary injunction and the permanent injunction rely on the same set of facts, you can consolidate the two under Rule 65 and have it all resolved at the same time.
Yeah, if you were willing to do that.
And you didn't do that. You just had a denial of the preliminary injunction request. You filed the notice of appeal, put the permanent injunction declaratory relief situation on hold, came up here, didn't ask for us to speed it up, and just been waiting here now.
Correct.
And go ahead.
Right. The fact that I'm talking about
they
that...
They say it's moot.
Well, again, I don't think it's moot. We've just been discussing some of that. But here's the point about the fact that hasn't changed and won't change after more discovery in the case. They admit that they don't allow demonstrations to have a permit during a weekday. That's a fact that goes to the center of the case.
But there's been no discovery here yet.
There hasn't been discovery in this case.
Do the parties agree that there's no discovery needed in order to have a trial on the merits in the district court? Has there been an agreement to that effect?
There hasn't been.
To that effect?
There hasn't been. In fact, we stayed discovery for other facts.
Okay, so you can still, if you dissolve the stay in the district court, discovery could go forward.
Correct, Your Honor.
Or would go forward, apparently.
Correct. That is correct. The fact that really is central, is it true or not true that they do or they do not give public assembly permits that close streets during the weekday? That fact won't change. That is a simple fact they've stated. They won't withdraw from that. The question then is easily presented already, and that is it permissible under the First Amendment to give favor to speech that is a festival as opposed to speech that would be a demonstration, what we call pure street speech?
What would you want us to do if we disagreed with the district judge on his denial of the preliminary injunction? Order him to give you a preliminary injunction?
We would want you to enjoin their application and use of that provision of their
code. You want us to issue a permanent injunction?
I could say a preliminary injunction to prevent their
the
use.
The only thing you've asked for is a preliminary injunction with respect to something that's already gone on. And how could we possibly give you relief with respect to that?
Because you can look
at... Do you want money damages because you were prevented from having that? Is that what you want?
We're asking for a preliminary injunction, and if you look...
But the event that it would be preliminary to has already passed, right?
Correct. But it's not preliminary to an event that comes up in a few months in January.
That's a permanent injunction.
Not necessarily, Your Honor, if you hear me through here.
Well, you can still go back to the district court and proceed and get that thing resolved before January.
Here's what I could do.
Proceeding, they take precedence.
I could go back to the district court after this court rules. I'd apply for another preliminary injunction for the same judge below for January.
Why wouldn't you go on your permanent injunction request? If you get your record completed and get the thing resolved.
Either one, Your Honor, but I'd get the same answer from the same judge on the same code with the same facts. You see, that's why here it's significant for this court to look at the code and make the decision of whether or not it's permissible to favor festivals over demonstrations. That's written in the code. That's not going to change. When I go back down and I say to this, I present the same code to the same judge, and I ask the judge to look at this code and rule whether it's permissible under the First Amendment to favor festivals that trump free speech in the same location, he's going to give me the same answer.
My problem is, and I don't know that maybe you were communicating, we're on the same page, is that there just seemed to me to be a ream of circuit court and even some Supreme Court authority for as long as the request for a permanent injunction is pending in the district court, making exactly the same challenge as the preliminary injunction has attempted to do, that the passage of time that makes the preliminary injunction request moot is not evading review.
I understand, Your Honor.
And what I'm trying to do is to get you to get past those cases. I mean, I just have pages of them.
I understand, Your Honor. And again, the uniqueness of this case.
I mean, if you'd only ask for, which would be a very odd thing to do, only ask for a preliminary injunction. I mean, I don't know if you can do that. But anyway, that's not what you asked for. You asked for a permanent injunction. You asked for declaratory relief, too.
Correct. And given the uniqueness of the way these cases went through this court and the lower court, we felt it was more economical to have this court give the final answer to the question simply.
Normally we give the final answer after the district court's given a final answer.
Yes. What would that involve?
You don't have a final answer from the district court.
You do have a final answer from the district court as to how they interpret the code that's before you today, and as the undisputed facts are as they are today, that wouldn't change by more discovery. What you're telling the parties to do is this, Your Honor. You're saying go back and have both the government and the plaintiffs spend money on depositions and discovery to create and reaffirm the same facts that you've got before you today to bring back exactly the same question in 2 years. It won't change. The fact that they give precedent
That is the case. Why didn't you consolidate the declaratory judgment? I mean, the declaratory request relief and the preliminary injunction request and the permanent injunction request into one request and say, we're prepared to rise or fall on these documents.
Your Honor, we did file for both a TRO and a declaratory judgment.
Rule 65 permits them to be consolidated.
If there's no
permanent
jury trial.
Injunctive relief.
Yes.
For purposes of appeal, that gets it resolved right now.
I understand.
In the district court.
I understand, Your Honor.
There's a specific provision in Rule 65 that authorizes you to do that.
I understand.
You didn't avail yourself of that.
If there is no jury trial requested by the parties, that's allowed. If there's a jury trial requested, that is not allowed. That's the distinction.
Then this might not be the case, because the person that can predict how a jury is going to rule is the person that is not in this courtroom and perhaps not on this earth. So how can you say that necessarily the result will be the same if you're requesting a jury trial? You are holding out that you still want that jury trial now.
I'm saying, Your Honor, that I was answering a question as to whether or not Rule 65 would be allowable to utilize that merger.
But you could drop your request for a jury trial.
So could the defense. But right. I can't force them to.
So the only reason you didn't ask for permanent, you didn't consolidate, was because they had asked for a jury trial?
No, Your Honor. I'm simply saying this. I'm pointing out.
Who asked for a jury trial?
I believe both parties did.
Both parties wanted the jury trial.
I could be incorrect in that, but I believe I'm correct.
Okay.
But I would point out again, we asked for a declaratory judgment as well below. Why is it this court can't just issue declaratory judgment here?
Injunctive relief, declaratory relief, and you say you asked for a jury trial. But you could have consolidated all that and had it all one fell swoop.
Could have.
In the district court.
Could have.
And you didn't.
At the time, another appeal with the same issues was pending before this court, seeking the same answer to the same questions.
And you wanted to wait until to see what happened there. And we resolved that. You still could have gone back and wrapped things up fully in this proceeding in the district court, couldn't you?
Your Honor, I could have gone forward and done discovery. I could have gone back and asked more questions, gotten more documents, taken more time with the government producing materials as well. That won't change their code. It won't change the fact that they admit that.
No, but it may change the facts of the case. And indeed, you said you want discovery still.
Yes,
sir. So if the discovery is useless, why didn't you just ask for rest on whatever they're going to admit?
I wouldn't say discovery would be useless, Your Honor. That's not my point.
It's either necessary or not necessary, right?
I would say it's necessary to other issues in the case. There are more issues here than just...
Wrap them all up one time, then come, if you're going to come back up here, come back up here one time.
I could, and it'll take us about 2 years to do that, or this court could answer the question of declaratory judgment, which was requested as well at the same time.
But the district judge has not ruled on declaratory judgment.
He made a ruling that answered the...
Ruled on, you told us before, that's pending in the district court.
It is. He didn't rule.
So he hasn't ruled. We don't have anything to review.
He did state, and this is his order, by his verbal order, not he didn't enter a written order. He said that he doesn't believe that plaintiffs will be successful in the merits. Looking at the code and looking at the facts.
That's one of the parts of the consideration for the preliminary relief.
Correct.
One of the things that he has to consider. In deciding whether to give you preliminary injunction relief, he has to evaluate those
and
factors.
That doesn't mean at the end of the day he's not
right.
That he won't change his mind when he hears the case. He's just making an upfront call.
I understand.
I know for actual fact of district judges who change their mind.
I understand, Your Honor. And in our view, it was simply a matter of trying to get an answer to a question. Did this court answer to the negative, and this court has the authority to answer in the positive or answer the question in a way that finally settles it. And it's in the sense of this, Your Honor, it's a very simple statement.
If an issue is moot and we render an opinion on it, we're rendering what they call an advisory opinion, aren't we?
That would be the definition, but I don't believe it is moot.
Favor rendering advisory opinion.
And I would agree. I know that there's a long history of cases saying the courts don't do that.
You get a jury trial when you don't ask for money damages?
Your Honor, typically no. I don't think, but we did, I believe, ask for money damages as well. Because, again, there was a great expense.
You did ask for damages?
Yeah, we did. There was a great expense that went into preparing for this event.
You asked for attorney's fees.
Yes, Your Honor, which many times I waive, as you remember from my...
There wouldn't be any jury trial on attorney's fees.
No, Your Honor. As you remember from my last argument,
no,
I do
damages.
Yeah, I do these cases.
Damages haven't been determined yet either.
They have not. They have not.
So in the district courts, you have permanent injunction, declaratory relief, damages that you're still seeking.
Correct, Your Honor.
And they're all stayed.
They are all stayed. And as I say, the code is today as it was then, hasn't changed.
This is where I think we have the disconnect. We're not really saying anything about the merits or not of your claim. What we're talking about is the posture that it is before us. And that's what you don't seem to be able to disconnect the merits or not of your claim. You may be correct on the merits, but we ordinarily don't look at anything that is moot or where we don't have a final judgment. We don't have a final judgment with respect to some of your claims, and the ones that we do have a final judgment on are moot.
I understand, Your Honor. And, of course, that's where we would disagree. We would think that this court does have the authority because I see I have a red light, but I'll just wrap this up.
Well, I've taken up a lot of your time, so go ahead.
Yeah. I would just simply state it this way, Your Honor. If we're really interested in judicial economy, if we're just trial lawyers trying to do our jobs, does it make sense that this court would send us back yet again after not answering the question in the first appeal and say to both parties, spend the money, spend the time, and come back again in a couple of years and see if the answer is still the same from the same judge? And I think that what we're trying to just simply say here is that we think that this is capable of repetition yet evading review because it's going to come up here in January. Every January an application is made. In fact, we would make application in the next week or two for January. And every time that an event comes up, in fact, the Democratic National Convention, I believe, is in Charlotte next year. How are they going to handle that as compared to this? So I'm closing now. I just respectfully ask the court to think about the fact that we've asked for declaratory judgment, which this court could render, to answer these questions that won't change after discovery. Discovery will be done on other issues. I'll submit the case under those views.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Robert Hageman. I represent the Appalachian City of Charlotte and Emily Cantrell.
Mr. Hageman, is the city at all considering revising these regulations?
Your Honor, we are. In light of the DNC, we're doing a thorough review of not only our public assembly and picketing ordinances, but large portions of the city code in anticipation of the DNC.
I think I would give it some serious immediate consideration.
We are doing that, Your Honor. Along the line of questions from the court on whether or not this case is moot, of course, we filed a motion to dismiss on the grounds that the case was moot. You'll notice if you look at the docket entries that Mr. Nelson, on behalf of his client, filed his notice of appeal the very day that Judge Mullen entered his written order. And the indications that were given to me at that time was that they were going to expedite their appeal. They did not follow through with that, and before I filed my motion, I consulted with Mr. Nelson and indicated that, in my view, the appeal was moot, and would he be pursuing the appeal? He disagreed, indicated that he would pursue the appeal, and of course, we filed the motion only after consulting with him in advance, as we represented we did in the motion itself. A couple points that I will make in the actual documents. In the motion for preliminary injunction, and this is an attachment to the city's motion to dismiss, the statement of the question presented is whether the challenged application of the Charlotte Code of Ordinances violates the Constitution. Even though he has stated, facial claims in the complaint, the issue before the court, before Judge Mullen, was the application. It was an as-applied challenge specifically for the permit application that OSA had submitted for a specific event in July, a five-day self-described festival for approximately 200 people, for which they desire to close one of the major city blocks downtown Charlotte Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. The prayer for relief in that motion specifically seeks a TRO compelling defendants to grant the public assembly permits requested. Again, this was not they were not seeking a preliminary facial declaration that the City of Charlotte's ordinances on their face were unconstitutional. They were contesting the response that they received when they submitted a particular application. And the application, again, was for a very discrete, specific event, a five-day event, that by the time we filed our motion to dismiss, had occurred. Now, a point I'll make, and this harkens back to the previous case that Judge Motz and Judge King sat on, where we fully litigated the case below through summary judgment, discovery, and it was only upon the court raising the question sua sponte, whether or not the plaintiff had showed sufficient injury to have standing, that we submitted supplemental briefs.
Well, that case, although it's been referred to a lot here, in fact, as I remember that case, the plaintiffs got to put on the festival or demonstration or whatever you want to call it on a pose. There was no problem with it. So it was in a different posture than this case.
It was, Judge Motz. My point is this event took place as well. But evidence of that is not in the record because the record was cut off on Judge Mullen's ruling on preliminary injunction. My point is,
did they get to put it on where they wanted to put it on?
They were not allowed to close the street.
Well, then, so that there is a difference.
There is a difference. My point is that a fully developed record that would be developed if we went forward with discovery and took the case to a final decision on the merits, it would present this court on appeal a full record that shows a contrast or the difference, if any, between what they intended to do as shown on the face of their application and what they actually did as allowed by the City of Charlotte. And that's exactly the inquiry.
As I understand Mr. Benham's assertions, it all may be very well and good to say, well, you didn't get what you wanted, but you got the functional equivalent. But we want what we want, and we don't think we're being treated equally under the Charlotte Ordinance. And that view is going to stay the same as long as this difference exists in the Charlotte Ordinance.
Yes, it will, Judge. And specifically in this appeal, the two events that they point to show that they were treated differentially were a Red Cross 90th anniversary celebration and a MECDEC celebration. What you don't have before you in this record is a fully developed record and explanation of the nature of those events that allows the parties to sufficiently argue the differences. And I'll just point out one that is apparent. Those two events were only a couple of hours, one day.
So
this event would have closed the street
there
7.
There are differences other than the message.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Neutral differences.
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
That would vary from event to event, from challenge to challenge, certainly.
We would have to do the inquiry of the events that they complained were sufficiently similar to theirs that maybe, they would claim.
Maybe a city executive or officer shouldn't be making inquiries of that sort.
Well, that's a significant and important legal issue. Can you make the inquiry into the nature of the event? Well, can you make an inquiry at all into the speech component of the event to make a determination as to what kind of an event it is under the city ordinances? And we can talk about that at the appropriate time. We think that that inquiry is has been sanctioned by the U.S. Supreme Court, but we understand that there are lines that you could cross in doing that and still violate the Constitution. One of the other points, just a second, please. Going again back to why I think the court's disposition of OSA 1, Venom 1, which I'll refer to, is that in order to show standing, as the court recognized in that case in the opinion authored by Judge King, there has to be a demonstration of injury. And in that case, what was critical to the failure to show injury is that Benham was unable in deposition testimony to describe what his event, how his event would have been different had we issued the permit he requested compared to the event he was allowed to hold. Again, I think that's critical in this case if you're going to go forward on the merits, because they did hold an event, but you don't have any evidence before you of how that event differed from what they requested. The other and last point, unless you have additional questions that I will make, and Judge Mullen really got to the heart of this as he announced his ruling. There was a lengthy transcript in the record of oral argument on the motion for preliminary injunction. And Judge Mullen, at the end of that, came back to one significant and important fact. What did they apply for? The face of the application states that they applied for a permit for a festival, not our characterization. And Ms. Cantrell did determine in her letter that based on past history in the application, she thinks this is more properly categorized as a demonstration, and then she indicated the reasons why she would not issue a permit. She went on to say, even if it were a festival, I wouldn't issue it for the following reasons. But what's significant about this is they're claiming First Amendment rights. They're talking about the First Amendment, the First Amendment, the First Amendment. What they wanted to do that they weren't allowed to do by the face of the application is hold a festival. With their words, the activities will be relegated to the Disc Plaza, which is not the street, with the exception of food vendors in the closed street. What we told them that they can't do is close a street 7 hours a day for a week for an estimated crowd of 200 people on the major thoroughfare at the square, the heart of Charlotte, North Carolina. I don't know how anybody can gin that up into a constitutional violation, that not being allowed to have to sell kettle corn and non-alcoholic drinks in a street for 7 hours a day, 5 days a week is a constitutional violation. We did not say they can't exercise their First Amendment rights without going in a street. In fact, we held out several public properties that were more than adequate to hold the estimated crowd that they had of 200 people. So in conclusion, we would submit that this case is moot, this appeal is moot, and I say that with some hesitancy because just like the previous case, the city of Charlotte anticipates that it will be engaged with this particular litigant until we get final rulings on the merits, and this just delays the day we'll do that, but we do not have a record that lets you go forward and make that determination.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Nelson, do you have rebuttal?
If I may, Your Honor, just 2 minutes. Your Honor, to just respond to a couple of things. First of all, as to them saying that they wouldn't allow something under the framework of how we applied, that's really the error they're having below and the merits of the question. They do allow festivals that close the entire downtown for an entire week. They do it repeatedly. In fact, the MECDEC event and the Red Cross event, they closed exactly the same area we closed that we request to close. In other words, if it was just a festival, if Ms. Cantrell just said, okay, you're a festival, we would have been allowed. But because she said we were a demonstration, we weren't allowed. And here's one question. I just really want to say this really quickly before I close. Think about this one thing. The very definition in their code of a public assembly is a festival or a demonstration that would close a street. Yet the reason they say, it's in her own words, the reason she said she would not grant this public assembly permit is because it's a demonstration that would close a street. And in the past, she admitted, in the record we had from the Benham One, that she had closed a public street for demonstration. So I know that council wants to go back and make comparisons and contrasts, but it still goes to the central question. If your definition is a festival or demonstration that closes a street, and that's a public assembly, and then they say they don't grant public assembly permits for demonstrations that close a street, there's no logic there whatsoever. And it is, in fact, contrary to what they've done in the past. So that is the question really to answer. And it's council's right. We'll be back. We'll be back in the lower court. We'll just keep going until finally there's some resolution of the merits. And we can either answer the question now or do it 2 or 3 years from now again. But the code says what it says. We've been treated this way for years, only us, no one else. And we're the only ones that, with our organizations, a public interest organization, that's willing to take up the fight for those people who have been denied repeatedly for these First Amendment rights. That's why we're the only people that ever brought this case up. They've denied plenty of free speech activity, trumping free speech over festivals, written in their code that way and the way they do it. And yet we're the only ones that bring it up because this is what I devote my life to do, is public service work. I know I'm out of time. I'll just close with this, if I may, in 60 seconds. As to whether there's a facial or as-applied challenge then was because, and the way it was framed below, was because at the time there was Judge Conrad's order on the face challenge below the code. Then when this case on Benham 1 was found to be thrown out or dismissed for lack of standing, there's no longer a case by Judge Conrad to look to. So there is no binding legal authority as to the facial challenge. Their code says itself that if you want to get a festival and we give you a permit for a festival, all free speech activity is cut off in that location. That's what happened to us in this case. That's what happened. We didn't get to have our event because a week after they denied our request for the same Independence Square location, they granted a summer-long festival permit, meaning that only on one day of that week, on Thursdays, could someone else come to that same Independence Square and have free speech activities. That's their manner and operative policy now. All they have to do is say, okay, here's a festival all summer long, no free speech activity. Your Honors, as a practical matter, I just ask you to look at this case, resolve it on the merits. You can do that on the declaratory judgment aspect of it, and just make a decision of whether or not it's permissible for the city to keep operating this way and continue to deny free speech rights. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will come down and greet the lawyers and then take a break.